H for Hustle Podcast. Welcome back. Another illustrious episode up ahead. And on today's episode, guys, we have D. Williams. Now, I want to say this. There are some episodes you have to record, right? And then there are some episodes that just record themselves. And this episode definitely just recorded itself. D, as the moment we jumped on, D was a open book. She shared. She was so open. She had a great story. She was willing to answer everything. It was just an instant connection with my vibe and her vibe. And I think you guys are going to hear that. It's going to resonate. I don't want to waste too much time because Dee's story is too good and too important not to. So I'm just going to get into it right now. Boom. Boom.
H for Hustle Podcast, welcome back. And on today, we have a great guest. And guys, you know, I love bringing on coaches. Most of the time, I bring on like mental coaches or spiritual coaches or business coaches. And today, I brought on a business coach. We have D. Williams. Welcome to the show, D.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So, D, if I was to meet you at a cocktail dinner, what would you say you do for a living?
First, I will introduce myself. I will say, hi, my name is D. Williams, Audationaire, and I help professionals. I help the underdogs, the underestimated, the underrated, tap into their individual audacity and achieve the most audacious things. And I do that by focusing on many different things, I guess I could say. So one, I build technology. But I do a lot of my work is around filling the talent shortage and the skills and shortening the skills gap in society. That's the real work that I do. And I do that through my technology and I do that through my consulting business and my coaching programs. And so, you know, I'm just somebody who inspires. I want to help people who are like me.
Got it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's an awesome thing to say someone at a cocktail dinner. Now, if we were to go back, let's say in high school, would I have met this polished, clean version of D?
In high school, I didn't finish high school. So,
oh, really? So yeah. can you, let's say starting from high school, who would I have met then?
I think 10th grade was the last that I had. I was already a mom. So okay. I was a little rough around the edges. I was fighting a lot with my fist. I think by the time I was in the 10th grade, yeah. So I was a little, I was interesting. I'll say that. I was a mom.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So my
and a
life,
young mom at that.
Yeah. And so my life was very crazy.
Got it. So at what point does D say, you know, I'm rough around the edges and I kind of want to be an entrepreneur? When does that journey start?
Oh, wow. I would say I was definitely an adult, a full adult when that happened. When I wanted my life to be different, I did not know entrepreneurship would be a part of my journey. I actually just wanted to live a different lifestyle. And I got into recruiting, and recruiting is very fruitful, and it kind of polished me. I really started thinking about entrepreneurship when I got around people who were taking our skill set, our job as a recruiter, and like making millions of dollars. And yes, I was on a like $55,000 salary. And I was
got
like,
it.
And they were coming to me asking me for advice. And I was like, dang, well, they're asking me and I'm not making so much and they're making that much and I'm helping them. Maybe I need to flip this thing around a little bit. So, and then my first rodeo at entrepreneurship was a failure. So I didn't even know what the heck I was doing.
I want to get into that in a second. How does a single mom who's always fighting get into to recruiting? How did you figure your way into that?
I answered her ad in a newspaper. Yes, the newspaper.
Wow, a newspaper. You hear that, kids? Newspaper.
The one section. And the lady, actually, this is a crazy story. I took my kids to the interview with me. because I didn't have anybody to babysit my children. And but I didn't take them on the inside. I made them stand at the door. My oldest son had my youngest son in the stroller, which was totally irresponsible. But I went in and I did the
stuff you could get away back in the days.
Yeah, and you know, I was like just trying to do something different. I had worked a few little small jobs. I had worked at this telemarketing job selling meat packages, but he was paying me under the table. And, you know, so I hadn't really, you know, then I did a couple of temp jobs working for agencies, doing more like admin work. But I had never thought about being the recruiter. And and she liked my energy and she was like, okay, I'll give you a call and let you know. I was like, okay, cool. And I walked to the door and she walked me to the door and saw my kids and was like, what's going on here? And I told her, I was like, why would you leave them outside? And I was like, cause you don't bring kids to an interview. Like, what do you mean? You know, but you don't leave kids outside. I'm like, so she's like, come back up here tomorrow, find a babysitter, you're hired. And I came in my first day. She's like, white pages, yellow pages.
Really? And you had to start calling companies to see if they needed paid labor?
There was no Google. There was no Google. The directory was the white pages for candidates, the yellow pages for clients. And then, of course, resumes you receive in the mail. Fax was really exciting. We got the rolling fax.
Was there a specific industry back then or was it like anything?
Anything. But we mainly focused on sales though, like sales and executive level people. Yeah. So.
Got it. So you said recruiting kind of polished you up. Like what did it polish up about you? Like your delivery, how to deal with people? Like what did it polish up?
I've always been pretty sharp, but I like, you know, I don't even have a 10th grade education. So, you know, when you get around a certain caliber of people and you sound one way or looks one way and they sound and look a different way, but you're killing it, you know, all eyes are on you, but you don't really fit in with the room. And so I started to pay attention to that. I'm going to just keep it real. Like, it was like white people. It's only like a few black people recruiting, especially when I started. So I would go into the rooms with them and they would say words and they would say things like, oh my God, you're so funny. They wouldn't laugh. Whereas if you hear me, I'm like, you know what I'm saying? They don't do that. They say, oh, you're so funny.
Yeah.
So I had to start picking up on, I went home and said, oh, you're so funny. You don't laugh. You say, oh, you're so funny. Yeah. Oh, you're so funny. Oh, no. Like, I just was like going to networking events and watching. And then I just started practicing. But the cool thing was when I went home, I was still D, you know?
Still D, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I'd call that learning how to be corporate.
Learning how to be corporate.
Yeah. And I actually, that was very similar to me where after my two companies and I went into corporate America, I had to kind of like take a step back. And I was like, before I controlled the whole thing. So it didn't matter what I said and how I behaved because it was mine. And then when you're in the room now, you're like, uh-oh, I gotta figure out how this thing works. You know, I gotta catch on very quickly.
Especially when all eyes really are on you. Right.
Yeah. 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 And then you're good at what you do. So they're looking, you know, they're looking for an excuse. So that's interesting.
Right.
All right. So now you get into staffing. You're doing well. How long before you say, oh, you know what? I think I can go out on my own or you can try something on your own.
Well, my life took lots of turns and twists and all types of things. But we can fast forward to now or in the last 10 or 15 years. I will say that I have always been in a recruiting job for the most part, right? I've always been a hustler, so I might have two or three jobs, but recruiting has been my core main job. You know, I love what I do. I would say I was married at the time. I'm not anymore. I'm happily single in the moment. But
I'm happily divorced.
So I was married at the time. And we were going through kind of a figuring out like who we are. It's my daughter's dad. And I had an opportunity to quit my job and to start my own business. He was scared shitless. I was too, but not like him. and it changed our relationship. I'm going to be honest with you. It really was a great thing for me, but it maybe not for the family structure, but it changed our relationship. And I started to take it a little bit differently, because this one thing when you start a business and you do it part-time and you still have your full-time job, but when you leave your job, and you,
it's a different world.
It's a totally different environment.
Yeah.
And you know, so
because one is halfway, I call it being halfway pregnant. The other one's like fully committed. Like I'm in it. Yeah. And there's no way you could truly be fully half pregnant. You're pregnant or you're not, you know? So you gotta, yeah, exactly. And it's a different world when you actually step on that side. Cause now you literally have to step on faith, and you gotta have that belief in yourself to go deliver.
100%.
Yeah.
It's hard to.
Got it. So you said your first venture was a failure. How did that happen?
So I started my staffing business. I was working. I found a partner that I liked, and he and I got along very well. We weren't partner in business, but I had my business. He had his business, and we were both starting up at the same time. And so we would talk to each other every day. We would share contracts, and I was just like all over the place, just doing everything. I'm taking any type of thing I could take. And it was really hard because the first couple of months I didn't make any money. So of course my family and everybody was like, go back to work.
Yeah.
And, I was just like, no, I'm not doing that. Like things take time and I'm going to stick it out. I just need y'all to stick it out with me. And it really was a great moment, even though things failed. So lots of things happened. I had no strategy. So let's start there. None whatsoever. Okay. I had no market. None whatsoever.
Nothing. Okay. You were just calling whoever randomly trying to
and doing anything. Place people, whoever. No regulation, legalization. Like,
oh, wow.
Out there walling out. Okay.
Not even an LLC, nothing.
Oh, no, I have my LLC, but I mean,
got it.
Like, you know, if it was, you know, things that you're regulated, your business is regulated to some degree. You know, I was kind of, you know, doing my thing, a little unruly. You're
skirting the lines a little bit.
You know, whatever, you know. And but I was having fun, you know, doing my, I like the control of it, right? Being able to control my destiny, right? Control my paycheck. I learned a lot of things. I learned that, I love that you said the pregnancy, like, if you don't put like love into your business, it just sits. So like being an employee and being an employer is totally different. When you're an employee, you're like, oh my God, I wish I could get up late. But when you work for yourself, you don't even want to get up late. You're up early.
You got to get up the earliest. Yeah.
You know, so it was just a different shift in trying to figure out, how do I do that? How do I manage my schedule? I'm working from home. You know, my family life, work-life balance was hard, trying to figure that out, being a mom and a wife. The wife part didn't work out so well, as you can tell.
The kids don't leave you right away. So you got, at least you got
they
that.
They can't leave you right. Yeah, exactly. So it was challenging.
So it sounds like you just didn't really have structure, an idea. You knew what you wanted to be an entrepreneur, but you didn't really know exactly what that entailed in a day-to-day level. So when that failure happened, did you have to go back and find a recruiter job, or did you just get back into something else?
I was so depressed. Like, I sold all the furniture in my house. Because see, like, I got it up and we made money. I did. Actually, I got it up and we made money. We made over $1 million that year, single-handedly, right? Mm-hmm. And we lost it when the recession came around. So things started to change. And I didn't go, And I got very depressed, and I sold all my furniture, moved from Maryland to Atlanta, and lived off my savings until I had $3 in my bank account. And I was sitting in the parking lot in front of Walmart with my kid, my daughter in the car. I was crying. I was so depressed, you know. And the phone rang, and this guy called me, and he said, "Dee." And I say, yeah, who is this? You know, and he tells me who it is. I won't say his name, but I love him so much. You know who you are if you're watching. And he said, I've been watching you for years. He ran my whole work history down to me, told me what companies I worked at, what achievements I made. He's like, I think you're an amazing recruiter. I heard through the grapevine you're in Atlanta. Is that true? And I was like, yeah, that's true. He was like, I would like to offer you a job. Would you be open? I was in the parking lot, my last $3. And wow. I said, yeah, I'm open.
The bank account says I'm wide open.
So, but I was super depressed during that. I told him, I said, you know, this is what happened. And I'm just going to go back and be an employee. I that's all I kept saying. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm an employee. I dressed like an employee. I dressed like I didn't love myself. Actually, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was really down. When I say down, I'm talking, I can't tell you how down I was. I didn't even want to dress going to work. Like I wouldn't wear my pajamas. It was terrible.
I've been there. I know it. When my second company didn't go the way I wanted to, and then I'd sell, and my daughter was born. So I was at home with like a baby, like literally like 3-4 months, and I was sad. Like I'm pushing the stroller, like this sad. People looking at me like, your baby's so cute. I'm like, I'm sad. Your baby's cute, but my life is sad. So I know that feeling. You know, in retrospect, we can all look at back at it and point out what did you learn about your relationship with failure at that point?
Oh,
looking back at it now, like what's your relationship with failure now?
We're married. We're married. we have an on. Like what I've learned is life is not real unless you have failures. Everything is not going to be a success. Something.
Can you say that again so people can hear that?
I'm just saying life so is not real until you have failures. Everything is not going to work out the way you may want them to. They will work out the way you want them to, but maybe not in the manner in which you want them to. And a lot of times those failures are a faster way to get you to where you want to be. But because you have your own idea of how you're trying to get to your destination, or you don't even have a vision for a destination, you're going to just float all around. Then yeah, you're going to stumble all over the place trying to get you to a specific destination. But I've always had a vision. At every point of my life, I've had a vision because my life has been so traumatic, at least my first 21 years were. And so I've always been very vision focused. You've got to have a vision. Failure is an amazing thing. It hurts. It's uncomfortable. It feels like a million rocks on your shoulders. You want to cry.
Oh, you preaching
sometimes
right now.
Sometimes you want to, some people want to blow their, I'm not lying. It hurts. It's horrible, but I'm married to it. I'm married and in bed with it because I know I can look back and factually say every time I have leveled up, or every time I've gone through something, or every time something didn't go right, I have leveled up right afterwards, like literally right behind it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, I'm going to go with the flow until.
Got it. So, and thank you so much for sharing that, because I always impart that on people and stress it like, hey, failure is going to happen. Lessons come out of it. And the things that come out of it make you so much better, because the first one literally is the worst one. And then after that, you get a little bit easier with the failure. It sucks, but it sucks a little less because you know, like, all right, I'm just a couple moves away from getting it back. I'm a couple moves away from getting it right. And you can always, you know, go back. And then the great part is you had a skill, believe it or not, recruiting was a skill, right? Yeah. So that guy found you because you did something. Yeah. He called you because you had a skill that was beneficial for him.
Exactly.
And anything you come out of failure with, you come out of with it with some skill. So no matter what you do, you never fail. You're just like moving step forwards, just painfully, you know?
It's painfully.
So when you got that job, now you start working, you're kind of depressed, but you're working and depressed. So what happens after that? How do you continue there?
I'm working and depressed. I'm super depressed. I'm very much still working, but I'm killing it in my job again because I'm really great at what I do. And in this particular company, everyone there really very much so admired me for the work that I did, except for the owner of the company, who was a racist. But I did not know this was all going on in the back end. So it was a lot of crazy things happening in the back end of the company. But because I was depressed, I wasn't aware. Until one day we had a meeting. And in this meeting, everybody got recognized for the things that they did except for me. And I actually made more money for the company than anyone. So when he was about to close the meeting out, they stopped the meeting and said, well, wait, what about D? And he was like, oh, that's not really that important. And I was like, whoa, you know, like, okay. But I was depressed. I was like, I don't care, whatever.
So I'm already sad.
Yeah, honey, just give me my paycheck. Let me do what I do, whatever. But my boss did not like that. He did not like that. He was super passionate Asian guy. And he came and said, I got to tell you something. And he said, we can file a lawsuit. Like, and I was so depressed. I said, I really don't care. Like, as long as I come in and do my job, like, it's just, I don't care. I was like, I'm an employee. Yeah. I'm just an employee. And so that wasn't enough for him. So him and the staff got together and connected with another recruiter who owned a staffing agency and talked her into calling me to hire me to go into another company because they felt like I was too good for the company that we were working at. And so I turned her down for about 30 days. I was like, no, no, no. And then one day she was like, just come and have lunch with me. I'm vegan. I was like, what's that? And she's like, we can just talk. And so we talked and she's like, you know, you don't seem like you're in the greatest place, but everywhere I go, everybody's talking about the work that you're doing. And I got a place I think that'll really value you. And I don't think you're valued in the place. I was like, no, I'm good. And she's like, I don't think you're valued. Just go to the interview. So they really had to push me. I was so depressed. The universe had these people genuinely push me through this process because I was fighting every step of the way. So I go to the interview. Listen to this. I go to the interview. I don't have on a business suit. I mean, I have on a shirt and some slacks, but I'm not dressed professionally. I was linked over in the interview, like just not engaged.
Yeah.
The guy was very much so irritated, but I had 16,000 LinkedIn connections and that was more than anybody in his company at the time. So he was like,
wow.
He told me, he said, everything in me is telling me not to hire you. But that recruiter has placed so many people in here who are number one superstars. And everywhere I go, they tell me you're amazing. I'm gonna go against my gut and I'm going to hire you. But you got to get it together. And so I was like, whatever. So
whatever. Who cares?
Who cares? Went to work. Go ahead.
So I know the staffing business well. As a recruiter, you get paid off the book of people you have. So you were willing to walk away from the book of business that you had?
So you could take your people with you. It's not okay. Like in sales, like your candidates follow you for the most part. Right.
Got it. Okay. And because you can still place them in other places.
Yeah. Yeah. But it started to change like with the internet and Indeed, you know, I had a company, like I have two LinkedIn profiles because one company forced me. They wanted to control my LinkedIn account. It's like, I'm not about to let you throw. And it's like, but you're too great for me to let you use all the people you recruit for us through your account. So they forced me to create another account. So I have an old account I can't even get into because we couldn't agree. We couldn't negotiate on whether on the account situation. But after that, I've always built my account. I'm at the max. I'm at 29,990 something people. And the max is 30,000. So, yeah, I don't know.
Got it. All right. So now you go to this interview, you get the job offer. You take the job, I'm guessing?
I take the job.
Okay. And then what happens after that?
My first 30 days, I complained about everything. My team, loser team. Job orders suck. Candidates dead. Like just depressed, just dead. So they call my recruiter and she's asked me to come to, I don't know what we did. I met in the elevator. I don't know. I think we met or something, but she said, I want to talk to you. And she's like, basically, like, I know you're unhappy, but like, I think you haven't really given the company a chance. And I feel like you haven't put yourself in, like, what's the level of percentage that you put into this so far? And I was like, about, you know, 10-15%. She's like, but they haven't even seen 50% D. They haven't even seen 75% D. Like, can you just give a little bit more for 30 days? And after the 30 days, if you don't like it, I'm going to find another place for you and put you there. But I would like for you to give 100% for 30 days. Can you do that for me? And I was like, fine. So I go back up the elevator. I fuss the whole way. I sit at my desk. And by the end of the day, I made my first placement. Done. And I became the number one recruiter there every month, except for two months. I was bored. I was winning every month. So I let somebody else win.
Wow. That's awesome. So So how did you get out of that depressive state? Because did you have like a hard talk with yourself? Did you go find help? Like, what did you do to like get out of that? Or it was just time that healed it?
Still depressed, still very much so depressed, because I wasn't working for myself. I was working for someone else. And that wasn't my true heart's desire. My true heart's desire was to work for myself. But what I did find in this organization was the ability to use my gift in a different type of way. And they actually respected my gift. Whereas if the company I was working with before, you know what I'm saying? They really didn't, right? And so I started teaching people, because I said in the beginning, I was real bleh. And then when they started seeing me win every month, it was that girl again, to the point that they was like, guess who's winning a month? Everybody turned around and look at me. You know what I'm saying? That's how it got.
It was like a foregone conclusion.
So people started buying me lunch every day. They like, can I buy you lunch? And then when they take me to lunch, it was to pick my brain. Like, how can I do? So when the management saw that happening, they would ask me to do small training classes. And every time I touched different parts of the staff, they would get 10 times better. They would produce more. So then they started bringing in people from other locations and I started training them. So one day,
you were learning to replicate yourself.
Yes. And I was in love with it. Like, I didn't even realize how much I loved it, but it was like, okay, this is it. And so I asked them, like, can I still want to recruit, but can I have like half the time training since I'm already doing that anyway? And they were like, heck no, you're going to recruit and recruit only. That's it. That's what you're best at. That's how we make our money. That's what you're going to do. And that didn't sit well with me because it felt like now I'm in a box and I didn't like that. So things were changing at the company. I'm not going to tell you the whole story because you wouldn't believe me if I told you, but I ended up in my boss's office quitting my job.
So you're quitting again, but do you have a plan, or are you just quitting, just saying, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to go figure it out?
No, I don't have a plan. I actually dropped my car off. I had a little blue Mercedes. The brakes had went out on it that day. I called my boss, my female boss, my direct boss, and said, can you pick me up from the Mercedes dealership and bring me to work? And she's like, okay, cool. I dropped my car off. I go to work. It was a day that everybody was out. It was just she and I, cubicle across cubicle diagonal. Everybody, all other cubicles are empty. A few managers in the office. And I just heard, I know you're not going to believe me, but I heard somebody say, it's time to quit your job. And as clear as you and I are talking. And so.
Believe it. I believe you. Trust me. That voice comes to you and you just got to go with it.
I didn't know what to do. I actually thought that the guys were in the office and they were pranking me because they, like, we were all friends. They always doing stuff, you know, pranking me, making me laugh. Mm-hmm. So I peeked around the corner. I'm like, who is in here? Who is in here? And my boss got up. She was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you didn't hear that? She's like, hear what? I'm like, you didn't hear? And she's like, nobody's here, D. It's just us. Such and such around the corner, but it's just us. And I said, oh, okay. So that happened like two or three more times. But the third time I said, I'm not quitting my job. And she looked at me and said, you want to quit? And I said, no, I don't want to quit. She's like, let's go in the conference room and talk. So we go in the conference room and talk, and she starts talking about a contract we were working that I was unhappy with or whatever. And she said, just tell me you're not going to quit. Are you going to quit? And I don't know what happened, but I just said yes. I don't know. I didn't mean to say yes. But that's what came out. And then she called her boss, and I went in his office. And he's like, I know you don't like me, but we love what you do. Are you sure you want to quit? And I said, yes. So then he took me to his boss. And then he took me to his boss. And when we got to the final boss is when the straw broke the camel's back. Because I did not know what I was getting ready to do. And recruiting, when you quit, they escort you out the building immediately. So you don't take their stuff.
Right? You can't take any wrecks off the board. Nothing. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm sitting in this office and he's like, I can't believe you're ready to quit. You know, you might as well just go ahead and go back to your desk, D. Let's act like this never happened. I mean, he was being very condescending. Let's act like this never happened. Go do what you do best. Go sit back at your desk. You're having a temper tantrum. And I said, nah, I'm not having a temper tantrum. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, maybe I'll go and start my own coaching business, making sure people are better than you. And he started laughing at the top of his lungs, like in a way that lit a fire in me that has not burned since. And it was the worst laugh I'd ever heard. And he was like, nobody's ever going to buy coaching from you, ever. Wow. And I said, well, maybe they won't, but how would I know if I don't try? And he said, okay, well, we'll meet you at your desk. I got to my desk. They was already ready for me, escorted me out. I got onto that elevator with my head held up high, got downstairs and bawled at the top of my, I didn't even have a car. I didn't have a way home.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, who took you back to the Mercy? Who took you back to the dealership? That was going to be my next question.
Like, oh my God. I called my cousin's boyfriend and was like, Terry, can you come pick me up? He's like, where are you at? I'm like, I don't understand. I just quit and they escorted me to the door. And he's like, okay,
I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
And he took me to the dealership. I was like, I need to take my car. They was like, we can't let you take this car. The brakes in. I said, I need to take my car. I haven't gone to the dealership. I was like, I have to take my car. Like, things, I'm not going to have no money. I have to take this car. I don't care about these brakes. They was like, you got to sign an affidavit. If you die from here today, we're not responsible. I signed it and I trucked that thing back on home. Parked it in my garage, got a bottle of wine, and crashed. My daughter had me laughing the next day. She was like, I just went to check on you, and you just had a bottle of wine, and you were laid across the bed like that.
That's the effort moment when you're like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do, but right now what I'm going to do is drink this wine and just relax and figure it out tomorrow.
This day was way too intense for me, right?
Got it. So now that you quit and you're there, you're sobering up the next day, you say you're going to coach. Do you have an idea of how to do that? Do you know where to go? Are you saying, I'm going to go to internet, I'm going to start a school? How do you figure that piece out?
I definitely wish I was way smarter. I did not think to go to YouTube. I think back now, I'm like, why didn't I go to YouTube?
YouTube probably wasn't that as good as it is now.
Definitely not as good as it is now. But I feel that if I would have went to YouTube first, then the trajectory of my career would have even been different, right?
Okay.
So, but I just did a Google search and I saw other people doing small things. I had already a network, I told you, on LinkedIn, a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I sent a mass email out and was like, whoa, I did the unthinkable. I quit my job and spread my wings and hope God got me, you know, and I need y'all to support me. And I sent this email out to 16,000 people at the time. And then I started to try to figure out how to create a training program because, you know, they were basically saying that they were, you know, I had to abide by this non-compete. So it's like, what do I do? So I started writing resumes just to pay the bills and mm-hmm. started to try to figure out how to coach people and train people. So I was playing around. And honestly, my mentor, I called him and I told him what was going on. And he really inspired me. He said, he said, do you know people? He said, you don't know your worth. He said, you don't know your worth. He said, people come to you for advice. I need you to know who you are. And I said, well, I know who I am, but I mean, I'm not in the, he said, what are you looking to charge? I said, $50 an hour. He said, quadruple that by four. I said, wow. I can't quadruple that by four. He said, quadruple it by four and then quadruple it again. That is your worth times 10. He was like, you've got to know your worth. So he inspired me to like start figuring out how I wanted to get into the swing of things. And two things happened. Can I share?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so two things happened. One, it was hard. Like I was struggling really, 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 really bad, you know. Ended up losing my place at some point. But before I get there, that email that I sent out to 16,000 people, I'm just telling y'all how this happened. So I'm sitting in my house, like really depressed this day, crying, like, I don't know if this entrepreneur thing is gonna be for me. The phone rings, I answer the phone, and this guy says, hi, is this D? I say, yes. He tells me his name, and he says, this is going to be a very uncomfortable conversation. I don't even know how to explain this without you hanging up on me, but before you hang up on me, just completely hear me out. And so imagine getting this call, okay? So wow. I'm like, okay. And he said, I got an email from a friend. And I never open emails like this, but I opened this email for some reason. And this friend said, this lady is da 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 and had all of your email that you sent out. He said, as I was reading the email, God told me to call you and to find out what you do and to pay you whatever you say to pay.
What?
I put the phone down my face. I'm looking at the phone.
You like, is this my coworker's pranking me again?
I'm sorry. He said, I know this sounds weird and I'm not trying to be funny. He said, I don't even know how to explain this. He said, but God told me to call. He said, I would never do this. I've never done this before, but God told me to call you. And so finally, he's like, so what do you do exactly? And I said, well, I help people with staffing and I did it. I told him what was going on. And he said, okay, great. So can you train me? And I was like, well, sure. Do you want to do a staffing business? And he said, well, I'm in IT and I could do this and da da da. And I said, okay, so great. You'll be like my first customer. I'm excited. Da, da, da. He said, great. How much do you charge? So now I'm calculating my bills. My car note, my car insurance, food. I'm like, so I tell him, I don't even remember what it was, but something like $500 a month or something like that per session. He said, would you like for me to put it into your account or would you like it under the table?
What?
I said, you can bring the cash with you to the appointment. He said, perfect. He said, again, I know this sounds weird, but I'll see you there. He showed up. Gave me the cash immediately. I tried to help him set up a staffing business, but for 6 months, this guy paid me, and I was more of like a relationship counselor. Like, I was really counseling him through his love life. We talked a little business. He never was disrespectful or inapproachable. Actually, he just sent me a message recently on LinkedIn. But he literally... And I never asked him about it again because I didn't even know if it was real. You know what I'm saying? But this guy paid, like, I was able to maintain my lifestyle with his. And so things like that happened to me throughout my life.
That's nothing but God and faith. And it just, your belief in you. Somebody out there wanted you to win and you were supposed to get there. And that was supposed to hold you over until you figured it out.
Until I figured it out. That was crazy. So yeah, that's crazy.
Wow. That's crazy. So when do you get your real first paid? Like, I get somebody, I help them get their staffing agency up. Because that person was just sent from God to hold you over. Mm-hmm. But, like, who was your first like client? Do you remember that person?
Mm-hmm. So remember I told you it was two things that happened. The second thing that happened is that I had established such a strong reputation in the staffing industry. When people found out that I was no longer working for the company, they started to refer me to other businesses and say, you should use Dee to train your staff. She's amazing. And so a lot of the staffing agencies would call me in to do their kickoff meetings, to do live trainings. And they started having me travel all around the world. Well, really around the United States. And I was going to the different branches and I was training. And as I would meet people on my travels, they would say, what do you do for a living? And I was like, oh, you know, I train staffing agencies. You mean like temp agencies? I always wanted to start one of those. Like, you did? and I would hear so much that one day I went in and like went online and did a webinar. Okay. And was like to see if anybody would be interested. And almost 600 people showed up. And so I realized it was free because I didn't know. I was just testing the waters. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, so I got a couple of clients out of there and I started helping them build their staffing businesses along the way over the course of the months. Nothing big, though, just doing things with my hands tied behind my back. And then in 2013, as I was traveling the world, the staffing agencies, the country, staffing agencies started to tell corporate companies about me. So they started booking me to come in and train and stuff like that. So that started getting exciting. And then one day I went to the hospital and found out I had cancer and that I only had 3 months to live. True story. And I only had 3 months to live. And so all my travel stopped. And everything that I had just worked to build up was almost gone immediately. And so I now had to figure out, well, first, they had told my mom to come and to plan my demise and, be there. So she went on leave, came to my house. and stayed with me. And during that time, I had to make some really hard decisions. Like, am I going to die or not? I chose not.
Yeah.
you know, what do I choose to believe? What do I choose to know as my truth? And what am I going to do from this point moving forward, whether I live or whether I not, what type of legacy am I building? That's where my life really changed. Because when somebody tells you you have 3 months to live, you're not going to see January 2014. You start to look at life in a totally different perspective, like a totally different perspective. And I think I grew up at that moment, you know, in a different type of way. And so that's when my journey went.
How does your brain handle that information to say, I'm going to push forward? Because that's in some people's cases, that's like, it's a dead stop. Yeah. How do you find that thing to keep on going?
Well, I didn't believe it. You've got to believe something in order.
So what do you go and do? Do you go through the procedure of trying to look for what the cancer is and go from there?
No, I followed all the instructions. I did everything they told me. I gave them one rule and one rule only. You can't call it cancer. Because when you're talking to me, you cannot call it cancer. You need to call it some other medical name, a code name. I don't really care. You can't call it cancer because cancer to me sounds like death. And I had no desire to die. I had no desire to leave. I did not want to leave. I didn't feel like I was ready to leave. And you weren't going to tell me when I am going to leave. I am the only person that defines that. And I was kind of gung-ho about that. And so they agreed to that. And they said, but you have to do everything we tell you to do. And I said, that's fine. I'll do that. My hemoglobin, how I found out my hemoglobin was a 4, which is death, pretty much.
Yeah.
And they gave me all these blood transfusions before I left the hospital. But it wasn't enough to save my life. And as much of my blood was producing, but it was coming out of me faster than it was able to produce, if that makes
sense.
And so they were giving me pills and forcing me to eat certain things and making me do things to increase my blood count so that they could go through with maybe trying to pull the tumor out, the cancerous tumor out. But my hemoglobin would never rise. And so that's why they said that I have about 3 months because I'm going to bleed. I was going to bleed to death. I was going to bleed out.
That's heavy. But you go through the process and then I'm guessing you're able to come out of that because we're talking here today.
Yeah. My mom comes in and I started doing some really crazy things. So once I decided that I wasn't going to die, that that wasn't my story and that I need to create a legacy, I started printing out things that I wanted to accomplish or things that versions of me that I wanted to see. And I put them everywhere. I put them on my walls. I put them on my ceiling. I wrote affirmations everywhere. I had post-it notes from my front door down to, but I was only confined to 4 walls. So when I woke up in the morning, it was affirmations on the ceiling. When I looked to my side, they were on my windows, on my curtains, everywhere. When people came to my house, they were like, what the heck? But I knew that I had to block out what noise I was hearing about cancer. And create
your own world and your own belief system.
I had to repro. They were in the shower, on the shower door, paced backwards on my mirrors. I could barely see myself. And I would say them all the time. And I would dream and I would plan. And I said, okay, I'm going to build an academy and I'm going to teach people how to start staffing business. And I'm going to do it the right way. I didn't even really, wasn't even thinking like that in real life, but I was just imagining because I had decided to stay. You know, I decided to stay. And so I had my few little clients. I coached them from my bed. You know, people came to visit me while I was on bed rest in my bed. And I got surgery. One day they called me and was like, I just left the doctor and they was like, your hemoglobin is at a 10, come in tomorrow morning. And I was like, but they just called me and said they canceled my insurance. He said, do you want to live? I said, mm-hmm. He said, come on in. So I came in and I was in the hospital for about 5 days because I had a hard time getting through waking up with the anesthesia. My body didn't like it. So I had a hard time. But once I got through, all was well. And I got to tell you, when I showed up to the hospital, my clients were there. a lot of my clients were there. Wow. I was so uncomfortable with that, but I thought that was great.
But they believed in you more than you. They believed in you. They had a belief in you, and they wanted to. And that's the energy that keeps you through that. You know, it's the energy that gets you through that because there's a vibration.
It's so beautiful. You don't realize how loved you are until something like that happens. You know what I'm saying? So we get through the surgery, and I'm on bed rest for another 3 months for the most part. But I can get up and move on right around my birthday. So I decided that I was going to create an e-commerce store to celebrate my life and sell staffing products. And I started putting stuff together, you know, and I got on a YouTube video and started talking about it, and things started to turn around. And my life has never been, it's just never been the same since then.
Yeah.
I decided to live in a full version of me. Like, I don't think before I did that. I think before I was just showing up, but and doing a job because that's what I got paid for. Right.
And that's what you were supposed to do. It wasn't what you were called to do. You were just like, I'm good at it. I'll do it.
Right.
It is kind of what it is. Yeah.
And now it's not like that. Now it is. Even as I talk to you, the joy that flows through my chest that is emanating out is massive. Like, I love it. I'm passionate about fire. When I say I'm fired up, that's not me being like fire. I feel flames through me. You know, it's really that way for me. So it's different types of work. My work is different now than what it has ever been.
So do you think you were good at something, but you didn't value it? And then going through the, I don't want to even call it cancer. I don't know what name you had for it, but whatever you were going through at that moment, do you think that made you have a value for what you were doing instead of looking at it just like as a transactional thing? It was like, oh, this is me. This is who I am.
A value on my life, too. In a way, and probably in a different type of way. But yes, definitely, in everything. I feel like I walked into myself, you know, and and I began to see all of the blessings over the years. There's so many horrible things that have happened to me, but I also began to see all of the people that were strategically put in my life in certain places who did not even understand why they were doing things for me. I said, okay, so this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm here. I'm still alive. I defy the odds. Okay, what are we going to do with this energy? What are we going to do with this strength? And my life began to
And, you know, before we got on call, I spent most of last night, like 4 hours last night, watching most of all your YouTube videos and, you know, this morning reading about you as well. I think the biggest thing when I watched you, you are on fire. I watch all those videos and you're like, your energy is like illuminating throughout the computer. And the one thing, though, is like you're happy to be in service of people, right? You're happy to be in service. And I think most people, I would say, if you can't figure it out, just try to be in service of people and then it'll come. And how has that been to be in service of people and then seeing people like change their lives and start agencies and start temperature and then really grow and get financially well and all those things? How has that been?
It was the changing point for me, because in the beginning, you want to make money, of course, to run your business, to pay the bills that are about to get shut off, right? But when you turn your attention to the people, it becomes amazing. Oh my gosh, I build relationships. I read this article once. This guy told me to read this article. Your first 1,000 customers are supposed to be like your core customers, and you're supposed to build these solid relationships with these people. And I took that thing overly seriously. So all of my first customers, I picked up the phone, answered the phone, talked to them, learned about them, got to know their family, got to know their kids, their mama, their uncle, their brother. And I began to build real relationships. And so when you see people come in with an idea and you start that relationship and they follow the process and they create and unleash their idea, right? And then they hit these milestones and it's like, it's just like, man, that's amazing. Yeah. It's just the most amazing thing. I love it.
And it becomes less about you paying the bills, more about helping others. And then all of a sudden you start paying the bills in abundance. because you're helping others, you're in service of others.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's awesome. Your story is wild. I gotta say that I wasn't expecting all of this. The lefts and the rights. That's amazing. So, you know, I would love to see what your answer to would be to this, because there's somebody right now, they're listening to this, right? They're good at their job, but they're doing it transactionally. I don't want them to go through a cancer scare to be like happy about life and to like really take what their skill set is and turn it into a passion thing. Mm-hmm. You have any advice for someone who's sitting there, they know they're good at something and they want to turn it into something, but they just don't know how, or they're kind of like stuck in that like holding pattern. Mm-hmm. You have any advice for that person?
Yeah, get out there and start learning. We're in a digital society where information is everywhere. I would say first go to YouTube and look for people who are doing what you're doing and see how they're doing it. See if they're doing it differently. See how they're doing it. See if anything resonates with you. Then go find a coach and then tell them what you're doing and give them your ideas. And then they're going to give you ideas to help expand your ideas. And then you'll start to really figure out where you fall into play. I would say that just use your gift. You know what I'm saying? If you're great at gaming, game. If you're great at recruiting, recruit. If you're great at sales, sell. And I would also say, look to network with people. Find people who are passionate, though. Like, you're not going to get everything free, but if you find people who are passionate, they'll pour into you in other ways. And you just have to make yourself available to receive the fruits of the, you know, what they're pouring into you. You have to be available and ready for it, almost eager to receive it, and then take it and then go and implement it, use it, and just continue to establish the relationship. Just keep the relationship going over and over and over again.
Nice. And that networking piece is a big piece, because again, it's not really sometimes who you know, it's who they know that they right. can connect you with. Yeah. So like I said, we have two more questions. I ask this to every guest, right? So there's somebody right now, they're sitting in a cubicle, they're dying a slow death. They hate what they're doing. They hate where they're doing it. They're like you. They were depressed. They were just going through the day. They're getting paid, but they're depressed. They want to make a decision to do the thing that they're really passionate about, but they're just stuck. What advice would you have for that person sitting in that position?
It would definitely be a similar response. You can only be stuck by choice. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So you have to first make the decision that you really are genuinely deciding to make a next move. Once you decide that and you commit to that, then you have to move. and I always say the first place to go is to go for knowledge. You go look for knowledge. You look for knowledge about what you do and what you know and what you're passionate about. And you look for people who are in that space. And you begin to network and talk to them and learn from them and then share. I eventually share, but you've got to go and get knowledge, and you've got to be able to see how your gift is already being used so that you can mm-hmm. define how you want to use your gift. Because when you see somebody else use theirs, you're going to get inspiration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you realize they're not doing anything that special that you can already do or is not already doing. Because most of the time, whatever that thing is in you, you're doing for free anyway.
Exactly.
If you're doing sales, you're going to be doing sales. If you're doing hair, you're going to be doing hair. Exactly. You know, you're already doing it. You just see somebody doing it on a professional level.
You can do it on a professional level. And one more thing I would say, if you're really good at what you do, and I mean really, really good at what you do, I always tell people, feel free to start showing other people how to do what you do best. Like, you don't have to work for somebody else to do what you do. You can actually be the person to go out and deliver that service. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't want to deliver the service, then you can be a coach. You know, you can coach people on that. So like, I use Reskillify. We get a lot of coaches that come in that have become consultants or want to become a consultant. They've been in their industry. They love their industry. They know their industry like the back of their hand. They know everybody in their industry. Now they're going to just decide, I'm not working for somebody else anymore. And I don't really want to have my quote unquote own business. I want to coach and inspire people and show other people how to do what I do, but how to do it better. And so that's another route you can take. You can become a consultant. You can become a coach. You can start your own business. You can freelance on the side and do other things. Try things that you are not good at. because you may realize that you have another gift that you ain't tapped yet into. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is your time of exploration.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And also try that trying things you're not good at, you realize like, oh, I might have another skill, or you might realize that this is something that I'm not good at and I can go learn, you know, like I always tell people, go learn publicly speaking. It's like, I don't like public speaking. I'm like, perfect, go do it. Go try, because you still need the skill of communicating with people. And it would be great, even if you never get in front of a group of people to do it, it would still be good to know how to communicate properly and effectively.
It's true.
So I know I'm definitely going to have you back on, because I know the audience is going to be like, so why didn't you get into staffing with her? And I'm like, well, we just wanted to get into her story, but I'm definitely going to have you back. Awesome. And we're definitely going to talk about how to start an agency, how someone should. Awesome. And you're going to talk about that. So I definitely want to reschedule that with you. Last question. Well, second to last question. Second to last question is, the name of the show is called the H for Hustle Podcast. Hustle means a lot for different people. What does hustle mean for you, Dee?
Hustle means audacity. It means that you have the audacity to go through, to push, to move forward, to decide that you're going to do by any means necessary ethically. Yes. You know, hustle is an energy. It is a decision. Yeah. It's a choice. It's a vibe, you know, and you know it when you see it. You can smell it on somebody else. Yeah. If you look hard, if you stand close enough to them, it's an entity that, that most people don't have. And you see the most successful people are successful because they tap into that frequency of the hustle.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, because some people would be like, when I get successful, I'll act like this. I'm like, that person didn't get successful when they got there. They were like that, and that's what got them success. So always think that. Also, last question. Who would you think would be a great guest on this podcast? And before you answer, you have to help us get that person on the podcast.
Latasha Harris. Latasha Harrison, she is the founder and CEO of Nurse Hustle Recruitment.
Nice. Okay. And we'll talk about that offline to see if we can get Natasha Harris on the podcast. Dee, if people want, they loved your story and they want to know more, and they want to know more about your staffing, they want to start a staffing agency, where can they find you? Where can they absorb your content? And, you know, where can they get in part of your universe?
Yeah, staffingpreneursacademy.com. And staffingpreneursacademy.com. And you can type that into Google. We have a great internet presence. We have a great.
And also, I will link it in the description of this podcast as well.
Okay, perfect. Feel free to go check out our reviews page under the About Us tab and check out all of our testimonials. You will be very inspired. So, yes, visit me at staffingpreneursacademy.com. Talk to our staff with the chat bot at the bottom.
Perfect. Dee, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me. I really have fun, actually.
And just like that, another illustrious episode is in the can. Man, Dee's story was insane. You know, I definitely could relate to her and that state she was when she was very, very depressed. And I've been there. And the fact that she was able to just work herself through that and get herself out of that position, also beating cancer. Like, this just, her story was just so crazy. And I hope you guys took something from it. I would love to hear your feedback on what was the impact for you in her story. I'm definitely going to bring Dee back, because we didn't even get to talk about as much as in her staffing agency and how she helps people start staffing agencies. And man, anyway, I'm going to leave you guys with the quote I always leave you with. This late great Nipsey Hussle, the quote goes, "This game will test you. Never fold. Stay 10 toes down, because it's not on you, it's in you. And what's in you, they can never take away." That's it, guys. Peace.